you very much. Shall I do a roll call for you, Thomas?
That would be perfect. Thank you so much, Glenn.
Pleasure. On the call, we have Wilson Abidaba, Lanre Ajayi, Stefan Hankin, Claudia McMaster Tamarit, Thomas Rickett, Charles Gomes, David Maher, Mason Cole, Alan Greenberg, Elizabeth Finberg, Kieran Melanchoville, Robin Gross, Catherine Grubin, David Heasley, Osvaldo Nuova, and I know that on the Adobe Connect we have got Ilya Vasilyakov, but I don't think he's on the call yet. And for staff, we have Margie Marley,
yes,
Barbara Roseman, Brian Peck, Barry Cobb, and myself, Glenda Saint-Gerie. And we have apologies today from Mary Wong, Ken Stubbs, David Rush-Turner, Avery Doria, Paul Diaz, and we have not been able to join Wolfgang Kleinwächter nor Sintra Sukhanan. Jonathan Robinson and Donna Austin have just joined us. And I think that's all. It's over to you, Tom.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Welcome, everybody. I'm Thomas Rickert, and I'm chairing this group. Before we discuss the subject matter, I'd like to ask you whether there are any updates to statements of interest. Hearing none, I would like to go to the second agenda item, and that is the status of the General Counsel request. May I ask Brian to update the group on this?
Sure. Thank you, Thomas. This is Brian Peck from ICANN staff. Checked with the General Counsel's office. They are still working on the response. Their target is still by next Wednesday, the 19th of December, in time for our next group's meeting. And if there's any change in that status, they let us know beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Brian. We've discussed this earlier. I think there is nothing keeping the group away from continuing its work. I'm sure, Brian, that once you hear from General Counsel, you will provide us with an update on this, but in the absence of any substantial feedback from GC, I would propose that we work on our task full throttle, which leads us to the third item on the agenda, and that is the status for input from SOAC and SGSCs, or Cs. Can I ask staff to provide us with an input on that, if any?
Hi, Thomas. This is Barry. Just to let the working group know that the requests for input were sent out Friday of last week to all SOAC chairs and stakeholder group and constituency chairs. We've seen some replies back that they've seen the request and that their respective groups will start working on their responses. We did establish a deadline date for 15 January, given the holiday season, and that's where the status is. And as soon as Glenn starts to receive some of the requests, I'll be sure to make sure that they're added into the wiki space.
Great. Thank you, Barry, for this update. Just for everybody to know, there has been some discussion on the mailing list since there was a communication or an email coming in from Jim Bykov, who asked for changes for that input or request for input document. This request for a change, however, was submitted to the group a little bit after staff had already sent out the request for input request. And there was a vivid discussion after that on the list, and I'd like to inform all of you that in order to give everybody a chance to inform him or herself about past documents that have been produced and exchanged, there's a wiki page in the making at the moment where all these documents will be stored in one place to make it easier for everybody to update themselves on the history of this subject. At the same time, and this sort of leads us into agenda item number four, we have discussed last week the strawman, as we've called it, that slices the work of this working group into smaller sections that can be worked on in parallel, and we have transformed that into a spreadsheet. So what you have received by email is a document that I have prepared, and it looked very ugly because I'm not very good at Excel, and Barry, whom I thank very much for assisting me with this, has turned this into this very elegant, colorful Excel sheet with various spreadsheets on it that we're going to discuss in a second. And the idea is to facilitate the work of this group with this tool or spreadsheet. The intention, as you may have read in my covering note, is that we use this as a primary resource, certainly next to the wiki, for our discussion, and that from the spreadsheet we link to the relevant documents, because I think we can't store everything in the spreadsheet. Having said that, as you will see from the spreadsheet, we have five sections in total, which are called the nature of the problem, which is a section that has been introduced during the last call, following a discussion that we need some additional information to be answered first. Then we have a spreadsheet called qualification criteria. We have the eligibility check. We have a section on protections. And we have another section on admissions. Now, I would like all of you to note well that this is not carved in stone. It is a proposal that shall help the group work on the various items, and it's something that I have put together based on the discussions that we had in this working group, but also in the previous drafting team surrounding the IOC and RCRC. You will recall from the covering note, and I'm going to say it again because not all of you may have read the email. The idea is, and we're going to talk about timing a little bit later in the call, but the idea is that we have subgroups of this group working on these various spreadsheets and help populating them so that we make sure that we have all the arguments, all the pros and cons in one place. And as you will recall from the last call, I have asked for volunteers to help out with this, and thankfully David Maher has volunteered publicly on the list to take care of the protections spreadsheet and help populate that. I think all of you know David. What you may or may not know is that David Maher was one of those persons way back when the UDRP was created who was instrumental in setting that that policy up and helping it to come to life. So I think that this is an excellent that it's excellent of David to have volunteered to do that. I think it will be a great help for all of us to navigate through this topic. Between the last call and this call, I've also reached out to some individuals in the group and asked them whether they would be willing to assist with this task, and I got some positive feedback, but certainly everybody of you should feel welcome to raise his or her hand and volunteer to lead on this. So nothing is carved in stone. Before we go into the spreadsheet, you should also know that those who are volunteering to lead on the various sections, you know, it shall not create a big burden for you guys. The idea is to have one name tagged to each task so that we have one person that accumulates all the arguments, puts them into a spreadsheet, and that can hopefully report back to the group. So those who are volunteering should not feel forced to give up their positions. So it's not a chair role. It's rather a rapporteur role, I would say. So please don't hesitate to put all the arguments that are in that are favoring your own position into the document. But I would like to encourage the rest of the group to provide their feedback and their input to the various sections as well. It will all be documented in the spreadsheet, and that will help the group and ultimately the community to come up with a decision on the various items. Now, regarding the nature of the problem, so I would propose that we go through the five spreadsheets one by one. I will make some initial remarks explaining what my thinking was behind it, and then the group will have the chance to add on the spot additional points so that we put the subgroups in a better position to work on it. Barry, maybe we can bring up the nature of the problem spreadsheet now. And since that is a question that has been brought up by Robin, I've asked Robin Gross whether she would be willing to be the leader on this specific item. Likewise, I would like to ask the whole group whether there are any further volunteers to take care of this as a leader. Hearing no volunteers, I would like to congratulate Robin. You've won this one. So you're now our person to take care of this first spreadsheet. And after this call or even during this call, please, the other group members, feel free to join Robin and help her populate the spreadsheet. Now, the idea behind the spreadsheet is that if you go to the very top, that we structure our questions or the answers to our questions by the following parameters. This will remind you of the question asked in the straw man, and that would be what are the specific problems to be solved with protections of IGO and NGO names. And then below that, we should list all the arguments in favor or against these protections and fill out this questionnaire. And please do note, and this is also mentioned in the comment that is in the spreadsheet, that these are examples only. That's information that I took from previous correspondence. It can all be changed, and you might even find the answers inappropriate. We can change all that, but this is just to illustrate how this tool can be worked with. So let's take the first item, that's cost of defensive registrations. Then we would ask, who suffers from that? You know, harm suffered by, and then you have the various sections, and that would be IGOs, INGOs, IOC, RCRC, recipients of IGO, INGO services, internet users generally. So for each of the arguments made, we should say yes or no to see what the impact of this respective argument would be. Then we would ask whether these harms are special to the organizations affected, because as you will recall from the last call, we're talking about potentially granting special protections to specific organizations, and therefore I think it would be logical to ask whether these harms are special to these organizations, because otherwise we might be perceived in our discussions to be biased towards certain organizations if other organizations or other companies face the same harms. We also had a lengthy discussion whether the existing or future RPMs would suffice to address the issue, and therefore you now find a column here asking, do RPMs address the issue? So RPMs might address the issue. Oh, it's all tagged yes here, so that let me just try to so that might need some rectification. But the idea is that we ask the question, do RPMs address the issue? Then the next column, why are the RPMs insufficient? Because we found out that certain RPMs are not designed or that they are exclusively designed for trademarks and not for protections derived from treaties. And that should go in there, you know, an explanation on that. Could the RPM be amended to address the issue? You know, there might be an easy solution by amending an existing RPM, or could an RPM contribute to the solution or not? That should go in there. How could we otherwise fix the problem? And would there be any negative side effects? You know, so when it comes to cost, for example, an argument could be that privileges are granted to a small group of registrants. And should this be a decisive factor? As an example, I've put in no, because costs are also incurred by other rights holders that do not have the qualification criteria that the potential beneficiaries of this exercise have. Let's go to the last point on the list. That is a public good, or let's say taxpayers' money. You know, when it comes to trademark owners, taxpayers' money would not be affected. If you talk about a public good, that might also be something that is unique to the beneficiaries. So I hope you get the idea of this this spreadsheet, and I'd like to ask you for your immediate feedback to that, whether you have spontaneous requests for changes to this spreadsheet. Give you another couple of seconds to think about it. I would be surprised if you found that so comprehensive that it doesn't need any tweaking. Okay, so can I take that you deem this as a good starting point for a discussion? Ellen, please.
Yeah, my answer is not a specific problem with this, but my experience says that it's only as you start working through it that you find that you start working through the process that you find there's a question we didn't ask or an option we didn't look at or something. So I'm sure these spreadsheets are not final. They're certainly a good start, but I think typically we're going to find what the deficiencies are as we start working through it and not necessarily mm-hmm. from a quick look at the beginning.
Yes, I fully subscribe to that, and this is why I encourage all of you to make amendments as we move on. Chuck, please.
No, thanks, Thomas. I think you just said what I was going to say. The subgroups can modify these spreadsheets as they see necessary. That's correct, right?
Yes, and I would explicitly encourage you to do so. Yeah. I just wanted to provide a first draft. And the reason why I'm showing you through the document today is that we try to smoothen out obvious glitches so that we have a good starting point for the subgroups to base their work on. But certainly the subgroups should feel perfectly entitled to change whatever they deem appropriate to help solve the problem or answer the question that we're tasked with.
Thomas?
Who's that?
Jim Bykoff.
Jim, please go on.
Yes, I just want to concur with what Alan and Chuck said. I think, you know, looking at these spreadsheets initially is not, you know, I don't have any real contributions at this point, but I think as we start, since myself and Kieran and David will be working on the qualification criteria, as we start working, I think we will come up with maybe some modifications or additional questions, et cetera.
And again, feel perfectly free to do so. You know, this shall just be a tool to make things easier for everybody and not to make it harder for them, because it's not a workable solution. So, please amend as you see fit. I have Ellen again.
Yeah, two statements, I guess. Number one, although I appreciate your filling in these example spreadsheets, I'm assuming in columns, for instance, on this one, in columns 11 and 13, you're not really considering yes an appropriate answer to why or how.
No, and I think that, you know, in formatting that...
it looks like
some
the
of the answers have suffered,
obviously.
So it's... No, but the straight answer to your question is no.
Okay. I'm assuming that the column 4 INGOs is INGOs other than IOC and RCRC.
That is correct.
Okay.
Now, and we can have that verified with...
That's an important distinction. It's not clear there are any, but that's an important distinction.
But that was the idea. Maybe, Barry, we can have an asterisk with an with a footnote. Explaining that, but in terms of the approach, you know, unless you have any immediate feedback, I would suggest that we take this as a basis for the time being. I would like to ask you, in terms of substance, whether you have any more specific points that you would like to like us to add to the spreadsheet right now.
Thomas, I have a question.
Please.
Jim Pykoff. We're working on the wiki page, and I'm wondering how that's going to tie in with the spreadsheets.
That's a good point. The wiki page, if my understanding is correct, shall be a central repository of documents and past work. So I think that this tool will help us for our discussion, while the wiki is going to be a source of information for those who want to dive into specific documents and comments that have been made. Barry or Brian, do you want to add to that?
Hi, Barry. This is Barry. Jim, just to build on what you were saying, basically the idea with the wiki, just like Thomas had said, is to centrally collect all of the past work products, letters to different groups and everything so that that's accessible in one central location. Material that comes out of those PDFs, those letters, those kinds of things may find their way into the spreadsheet to help answer certain questions or aid in the analysis. But, of course, the bigger types of materials will be stored over on the wiki.
It seems to me, though, that the wiki page would also be of use for others who are not in the group, so that other constituencies who are asked to, or other groups that are asked to comment, should have the background materials to access when they look at, you know, what we're doing on the spreadsheets.
That is certainly, Barry, please.
Yeah, that's correct, and certainly I believe everybody in the community has read access to that wiki space, and so you're correct. They will be able to reference those specific wiki pages that contain all of that background material.
Thanks.
So while the wiki is more... an archive of all the working products. I want this. I would hope that the spreadsheet is a living document and accurately reflects our discussions and makes it easier for us to keep an overview of the various arguments. I have on my table huge piles of documents. You know, position papers, Q&As, board resolutions. Letters and stuff, and it's hard to keep an overview of that. So I think the task of the subgroups will be to go through these documents and take out the main arguments that have been made and put them into one place, and allow for the group to assess them according to the questions and criteria that are put up in the the spreadsheet. Okay, so if there are no other requests for changes for this first spreadsheet, I'd like to thank Robin again for volunteering to help populate that. We would also need to talk about the modus of work that we pick. For the time being, I would like to encourage you, if that's okay with you, Robin, that you know the points that you have that you want to add to this part of the spreadsheet are sent to Robin, and Robin puts it all into one place. And should you see the need for discussions amongst the members of the subgroup, then please get back to myself or to staff, and we will try to facilitate that. Is that something that you can live with? Hearing no objection, I hope that Robin is going to get a lot of emails with contributions from the members of the group. Robin, I propose that, and this would also apply for the other leaders, that we share the individual mailing mail addresses with the group members on the list. Would that be okay?
Thank you very much.
Yes, that's fine with me. This is Robin.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. That leads us to the next spreadsheet, and that would be qualification criteria. Again, I'm going to show you through the logic, or hopefully logic, behind it briefly. Remember, the arguments made are just examples. I know, or all of us know, that there are that many more criteria have already been sent to the list. Let me highlight the work that Claudia has done. She sent in like 10 or so criteria that can be used or should be considered, and Evan has done so too. So I think in the course of the work, these arguments and maybe many more need to be documented and included in the spreadsheet. I have reached out to Kieran, Jim, and David earlier, and asked them whether they would be willing to take the lead on this. The reason for that is that you know, while Robin has raised the question of the nature of the problem, and I have asked her, a lot of work has been put into the qualification criteria by the IOC. I would like to ask the group, though, whether there are any more volunteers to take care of that subject. Hearing and reading none, I would like to thank the three of you for taking on that task. Again, the whole group shall please send emails to Kieran, David, and Jim. I would propose that for the sake of making things easier, that you decide to whom of which the correspondence should be sent, and then we will share that contact with the whole group.
Hi, Thomas. This is Kieran. We'll send out an email to the group with the correct email address to communicate with us on that issue.
That is perfect. Thank you so much, Kieran.
Yep, thank you.
Now, the idea is that, talking about qualification criteria, that we ask the question to whom the respective criterion applies. So taking the example of protection by treaty, we would have IGOs, INGOs, IOC, RCRC. We would then ask, and these are the points that we discussed during the last call, are these, or is this specific criterion objective? Is it globally applicable? Is it easily and unambiguously verified? So is there no subjective facet to it? And then the group has added that there are criteria that might not be objective, but that might still be a good starting point for deciding whether an organization would qualify or not. I have tagged this otherwise suitable. You might find better wording for that, but this is just to let you know that I try to absorb your proposal and use that language for it. The next question would be whether the criterion is special to the beneficiaries affected. We would be able to answer these questions yes or no. And then we come to the fields that might or will surely require more text, and that is the pros and cons. And I'm sure that there will be a vivid discussion surrounding these. I've just added, a few sample answers in here, but certainly there will be many, many more. To give you an example, protection by national law. If we say there are protections by national law, then it would be yeses. In the beneficiary section, it might also be objective, it might be globally applicable, but then is it easily and unambiguously verified? That's questionable, because for some laws there are exemptions, and that's what you find here in the cons section. And also the argument that was brought up by Chuck Gomes during last call, when he reminded us and updated us on the work that has been done by the Reserved Names Working Group, because that working group had made an intentional decision not to grant special protection. So that could go in there. So that's the idea of that spreadsheet. And again, I'd like to ask you whether you have questions. I take Barry first and then Ellen, please.
This is Robin. Can I get in the queue also?
Yes, please. Barry?
Yes, thank you, Thomas. This is Barry. Just to carry on with Kieran's question, if any of the sub-team leaders need email addresses, I strongly don't advise or advise that you don't send that out to the email list. The body of an email does not get scanned to block email addresses. So we wouldn't want to create a spam farm or anything like that. If you're asking an email address, please send Glenn and I an email. We'll respond back to you directly, and then we can help also coordinate any other communications with members of your sub-team and those kinds of things. But, again, if you're going to include email addresses in the body of the email itself and you intend to send it to the list, I recommend that you don't include those. Thank you.
Thanks, Barry. Ellen?
Thank you. Can you explain column 11, special to beneficiaries affected? I'm having difficulty understanding what you put there if there's already a yes in a particular column for some set of beneficiaries.
That might not be applicable to the first couple of arguments, but if you look at organizations that serve a public good, that might have special, or that might have different treatment in K.
Okay.
Or even organizations that cannot use the RPMs. The question is, if you have protection derived from treaties, then you might not be eligible to certain RPMs. And the question is, are you the only type of organization that is suffering from that? Or would there be more rights holders or holders in legal positions to identifiers that could not use RPMs?
Okay.
So it's all to be able to determine whether we discuss something that is unique to these groups, or whether there might be unequal treatment if we found out that everybody is affected by that, and then yet based on the same criteria you give special protection to a subgroup that might be perceived unfair. So that's the logic behind it. Again, I'm not saying that this has to remain as it is in the spreadsheet now. Robin, please.
Thank you. Yes, I think we need to add another column on here, and that would be the scope of protection that is offered. I see we've got or some of the questions here are protection by treaty, protection by national law, et cetera. And so I think that a simple yes or no doesn't really answer that completely. I think we need to talk about what is the scope of that protection that's offered by the treaty or by the national law or required in the jurisdiction, that sort of thing. Because, what are the limitations of that protection? I'm thinking, for example, a lot of protections that are offered don't apply, are only applicable to commercial speech, and they don't apply to non-commercial speech. So that's a specific limitation that I think we would need to include in our analysis to get a complete picture of what is the scope of the protection that is offered, and what are the limitations of that protection.
Thanks, Robin. I'm not going to push for my initial format of the spreadsheet, but let me just explain that I had considered that. And to answer that specific point, one would probably need to say no in the easily and unambiguously verified section, because there might be legitimate speech or legitimate use, and that could also be mentioned in the cons section and also in the negative side effects section. So, I think there might be room for that type of argument. Nonetheless, I'm more than happy to have an extra column added with the scope of protection, you would call it, or...
Yeah, I think it does need its own column, because those other things maybe sort of can touch upon that issue, but I think without really understanding what is the scope of protection that is offered by this treaty or by this national law or required in this jurisdiction, I think we're not getting a complete picture. I think a simple yes or no is just too simplistic, and I think the point of this exercise is to really for us to drill down and look carefully at the specifics and really understand what is the scope of protection that is offered, and where are the holes. Where are the gaps that we need to reach to so we can cover that?
Okay. Also, and maybe that's a general remark, the group doesn't have to say yes or no where this is as a sample in there. So there can be full text answers to that. May I ask you what the heading should be like? Should it be scope of protections?
I think it should. Scope of protections, including limitations.
Scope of protections, including limitations. So I...
Thomas, can I comment on that when you have a chance?
Yeah, and Alan, too.
Yeah, I have Alan, Claudia, and then Jim.
Okay. I think my preferred answer, Thomas, is what you just said. That is, not have a yes or no answer in the applies to column, but have more... But identify what this limited scope is, if it's limited or whatever, because otherwise, Robin is right, you do need a place to say what the scope limitations are, but they may differ for each of the four columns or each of the whatever five columns applied to. So either we're going to have five different answers in addition to the yes, or simply replace the yes with a statement of what the limitations are or what the conditions are, if there are any.
Thank you, Alan. Claudia?
Hello, this is Claudia.
Please go ahead.
I would like to just add as well, this is also related, that perhaps there might be need for a column that would talk about the connection to the identified harm, the connection between the identified harm and the protection that is given an international organization under a national law, for example. For example, the national law might identify particular vulnerabilities of the organization to the harms that we would identify. And there might be some scope there for highlighting some of the harms that would be needed to be avoided in the exercise of looking at the scope of protection under the national law. So I'm wondering if there's room for a column as well for connection between harm identified and scope of protection.
I'm still there to start with. Just thinking where we could best place that. Or whether that should be dealt with in the nature of the problem section.
I say that because I think that some of the answers, or even some of the evidence, if you will, for the nature of the problem would be in the law itself or in the treaty itself.
So couldn't it just, could it not be just another argument in the qualification criteria, another criterion?
Yes and no, perhaps. I think there's the fact of a protection, and then there is the reason why it was instituted. There's the reason why it was ratified. There's the reason why it was legislated. So they are a bit different, but they're very much connected. So that's why I was trying to hope that maybe we would identify an area where that argument could be placed.
Or would it be okay maybe for both Robin's and your remark to have an extra note or remark field where these points could go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe having an explanation to that field that we, you know, that the information you mentioned could go in there.
Yeah.
Let me take Jim first and then get back to Robin.
Yes, Thomas, I just want to mention that on scope of protection, if we're going to be putting in the scope of protection under treaties and legislation, what we're going to have to do is basically go through each treaty and each enactment of national legislation, some of which will have to be translated first. It's going to take a lot more time to do that. I mean, it can be done, but it's not going to be done in 2 or 3 days or even a week. That's something that we'd have to struggle with. I think that's something probably that ICANN Council is doing now on his task. But I'm not sure that we could really do that in a very expedited way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the point is well taken. To be quite honest, I was more or less thinking of a more high-level view on things, you know, because protection by treaty, regardless of the scope that might have, might be a determining factor in itself without analyzing each and every treaty. And this argument in itself could be assessed by the group. And then certainly the deep dive could be taken once the analysis of General Counsel is there. But I think that there are some common factors to protection by treaty which could be analyzed here. But, you know, I don't want to prescribe as to how the subgroup is going to deal with that, but I would very much like to recommend that we keep it as concise as possible, because protection by treaty is only granted to a certain group of organizations. So I would more or less keep it to that. And then the various exemptions, the complexity that you mentioned, that there are multiple treaties, each of which have a different scope, that might go into the comments on the treaty point or treaty argument itself.
The other thing I would say, Thomas, is that if we have the feedback from General Counsel by next week, we may not have to duplicate some of that because it may be in his report.
Yes, again, point well taken. We should avoid duplicate work. I would caution that the results of the work might not be there for next week, so we should do what we can in order to work without General Counsel advice on this. So again, I would recommend that you, as leaders of this subgroup, try to take rather a bird's perspective on things, because I think that the arguments as such can be assessed in general for their suitability for making a decision to grant or not to grant special protections.
Okay.
And I would very much like to invite Claudia to... You know, Claudia, you made very good suggestions, and certainly you're most welcome to be active in this and certainly also in other subgroups. Robin, getting back to your original point, would it be okay for you also to have an additional remarks or notes field with a footnote clarifying that information on the scope of the protection should go into that field?
Well, I'm not entirely sure what you're asking when you say, you know, like have it in a footnote. I think it should be a column that is answered for protection by treaty, for protection by national law, for protection by required by jurisdictions. I think it completes helps us to complete the analysis of understanding what it is that is protected by treaty, that is protected by national law. I mean, we've got groups claiming they've got protection by treaty and by protection law, so therefore they deserve these rights. I think we should understand what is that protection. I think that that's a very important question. I don't see how it would be a footnote. It seems like it's one of the most fundamental things that we need to understand.
Just to clarify, the footnote should be an explanation to the field, right? It doesn't mean that the points might be perceived less important. But I take your point, and I propose that we add two columns, Barry, one of which is the scope of protections column asked for by Robin, and then we have an additional remarks column with an explanation that the point Claudia made could go in there. I'd like to ask the group to raise their hand if there is any opposition to amending the spreadsheet as now described. Seeing none, I'd like to thank you for your contributions to this section, which leads us to the third spreadsheet, and that would be the eligibility check. That is a little bit easier, hopefully, to handle, because the question might be easier to answer. And I have asked Alan Greenberg, who joked during last week's call that this might be an easy thing to deal with by merely saying yes or no, whether he would be willing to take on that task, and thankfully he has accepted. Nonetheless, I'd like to ask the group whether there are any more volunteers to lead on that subgroup. Hearing and seeing none, I'd like to thank Alan again for his willingness to take on this. Alan, it's your turn.
Thank you. I'll make a comment similar to what I said in the last one on Robin's suggestion. I don't think the yes-no answers necessarily are sufficient. You know, for instance, look at the one of ICANN approving INGOs. I think it's going to depend on what the criteria are. And remember, the criteria was subject to huge discussion a few minutes ago. So, you know, the answer in my mind for can ICANN make the judgment call is yes, if it is objective and, you know, specified and doesn't require all sorts of things, no, if it doesn't. So, you know, the yes-no I don't think is going to apply, but other than that, I think this is a doable thing. So I'm willing to take it on, assuming there are other people who want to work on it.
And again, to avoid misunderstandings, feel free to amend the spreadsheet as you deem appropriate. And certainly the concrete use of the outcome of this this spreadsheet will depend on the criteria. Nonetheless, since time is of essence, and since we have agreed that it would be advisable for the group to work on the various items in parallel, it will help the group when it comes to completion of its work to determine which path to pursue, because there might be solutions that are preferable to others. Just to give you one or two examples, if ICANN does the determination itself, ICANN would need to build up a department for that and build up expertise that might not be inside the organization at the moment. So that might be a hurdle or something at least to consider for the group when defining a potential solution. At the same time, if you can take a list or information that is already made by a trustworthy third party, that might be an easier solution and it might be more cost efficient, but it's not as flexible as if you can steer the whole process yourself. And I think those points should just be thought through by the subgroup to help the whole group determine which way they want to pursue once we get there. Is there any instant feedback to this little spreadsheet? I have Alan. Is your hand still up or
no? Sorry, down.
Okay, Chuck, please.
Thanks, Thomas. Just wondering whether my thinking is correct that this subgroup probably would want to check with ICANN staff to see if that's really an option. My prediction would be that ICANN staff may be willing to undertake this sort of a task if the criteria were very objective. If they weren't, my prediction is they would not be willing to undertake that task. So I'm just suggesting that might be a task of this subgroup to explore that with ICANN staff. In other words, there's not any reason, it's not useful to go down the path of considering ICANN staff if it's not an option.
Yeah, the point is well taken. Thank you very much. And maybe Barry or Brian, you could check internally, maybe also with JJ. You know, it might well be that JJ objects to ICANN itself taking on such tasks because there's certainly also a liability risk involved with that.
Thanks, Thomas. This is Brian. Yes, I share those concerns, and so certainly we check with them. But I think Chuck raises a good point there, and so we'll follow up with that.
Great, and you please provide the feedback to Alan so that he can include that in the
sure
in the spreadsheet.
Okay,
perfect.
This is Robin. Can I get in the queue on this?
Yes, certainly, Robin. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I sort of wanted to say something similar to along the lines of where Chuck was going. That I think it's kind of hard to determine who should be making the determination of criteria before we know what the criteria is. So, and this is just a thought. I'm wondering if we should maybe switch it around a little bit and say, okay, what are the circumstances under which ICANN would be the appropriate party to do the eligibility check, or that the contractor would be the appropriate party, or that the third party would be the appropriate party to do that. So that way, when we know what the criteria is, we can match it up against how we've already thought this through in terms of who's the best party to do the eligibility check. So, I mean, I'm just kind of talking about sort of switching the order of the way we're thinking about it, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I have Ellen next.
Yeah, I think what I said in my first comment is echoed by all the rest of the speakers. The absolute answers of who will make a decision, assuming we go ahead with this whole process, is going to depend on which criteria, and different criteria, which might be used in parallel, may have to be assessed by different groups. So all we can do at this point is try to identify which kinds of criteria might be assessed by the various parties. I appreciate you asking for an opinion of ICANN, whether they want to do this. I can't imagine ICANN doing anything other than it is on a list established by someone else, you know, or some other absolutely non-subjective criteria. So, some of the answers here, the only reason I accepted this is I think the answers are relatively easy because they're going to come in groups like that.
Thanks, Alan. Chuck? Chuck, are you on mute, maybe?
Was, thanks. What's the difference between a contractor and a third party?
Let's say there were a certification authority creating a list. That would be an existing third party that already takes takes a certain task and that can be asked whether they could produce a list for us. While a contractor would be somebody who would tasked to do certain things based on an RFI.
Okay. My guess is that any even third party like that would probably have to enter into some sort of a contract with ICANN to perform the function, but I could be wrong on that. Thanks.
I think you are not wrong. I think the third, it is likely that the third party would need to have a contract with ICANN, but there's also the chance that the third party creates a list already and does certain things that we could build on. Certainly there is overlap between the two, but I thought it might be worthwhile making this distinction because contractors are sometimes universities or consultancies or other types of companies that see an RFI and build up expertise to fulfill the task that is being asked for, but it would be specifically done for ICANN as a contractor.
That's fine, Thomas.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chuck. Any further comments to this?
Yeah, can you define what you mean in the last row?
Use list of ECOSOC?
Which list?
I was using the information circulated by Wolfgang Kleinwächter. He linked to ECOSOC where a list or lists have been generated already that could be used. So this is just a placeholder.
Okay, if you could fill in the URL somewhere so make sure we're all talking about the same list.
Yes, I'd send that to you.
Okay.
I'll resend Wolfgang's email to you. But
I can probably find it. I just want to make sure that we're not talking about different things.
Well, and again, there can be other criteria.
Indeed, but you included this one, so I want to make sure we're answering your question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So any other feedback to this specific spreadsheet? Hearing and reading none. Let's move on to the next spreadsheet, and that is the protections spreadsheet, unless there are other volunteers to chair that group. That would be led by David Maher. Can I ask whether there are any other or any more volunteers? I have Greg, please.
I'll volunteer to be on that group as well.
But are you volunteering to lead or to contribute to it?
I guess you can co-lead. Either one doesn't really matter to me.
Okay, so we had David Maher volunteering to lead first. Would you be happy for him to lead and contribute?
Sure, that's fine.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Now, I have had a brief discussion with David prior to this call, and David was kind enough he answered in the affirmative to my question whether he would be willing to lead on this part of our discussion. So, David, over to you for up to 20 minutes on this subject matter.
I hope it won't take 20 minutes. I first think we owe a great debt of thanks to you, Thomas, for all the hard work that you put in on this on these charts. As you mentioned, I spoke to you about the wording of this particular chart, and I had no suggestions for improvements on it. Obviously, there are a whole raft of controversial questions that are raised, and I look forward to receiving comments from as many people as possible. At this point, if there's anyone who thinks that the chart somehow needs to be expanded, I'd be happy to hear about it.
Greg, is your hand still up or up again?
That's just a vestigial hand.
Well, I think that answers the question, Thomas. At this point, all I can say is that Greg and I welcome contributions to filling out this grid.
Great. Thank you, David. I think nonetheless, maybe we should go through the document briefly because as we've seen from the previous spreadsheets, there have been some questions or suggestions for amendments that we could take up instantly and include them. So the idea here was that ultimately, if the group chose to grant special protections to a certain type of organization fulfilling certain qualification criteria that have passed the eligibility check, then the question would be, what should these protections look like? And we're talking about a reserved names list or reserving the names, but during our discussion so far, we've already found out that merely putting them on the reserved names list might not be a good idea. So I have, for the sake of completeness, included the reserved names list here. We would need to discuss the pros and cons. And Claudia, I'll get to you in a second. The pro would be that it's easy to implement, but to me, if you ask me personally, a big con would be that there is no standardized exemption process. And there's a difficult procedure. You would need to go through an RCEP process to allow registrants, even for the organizations themselves or other eligible third parties that might, under law or under other regulations, be entitled to use a certain identifier. We can then talk about suggested amendments for the RPMs or alternatives, and then ultimately I would suggest that we make an overall assessment, and for this particular RPM or this specific tool of the reserved names list, I've taken up the idea which I think was agreed upon between Greg and David on the mailing list, who sort of agreed that a reserved names list would be ruled out. Then one could think of a modified reserved names list. I've put this in quotes with an exemption procedure. The pro would be that if you had an exemption procedure that would address the shortcoming of a reserved names list, but we would need a new technical vehicle to deploy this, because at the moment there's no requirement for registries enshrined in the applicant guidebook to deal with this. Now, we do know that a lot of registries do have their own sort of reserved names or block names lists, so an alternative to this RPM could be voluntary measures taken by registries. So that could be an information going in there. Then we would need to talk about the UDRP. It is an existing procedure that helps resolving primarily clear-cut cases. The reactive RPMs help ensure that legitimate use is not prohibited. This argument has been brought up earlier, not during these discussions, but earlier, that in many cases a string itself might not be illegal, but a combination of a string with an offer or, you know, a website with certain content might make it illegal. So that could go in here, you know, favoring reactive measures over proactive, but I think it was Greg and two or three others who said that for protections to be efficient for these organizations in question, they need to be proactive and not curative, and therefore the reactiveness, if that's a proper English word, can be a con as well, and also the costs. Now, you see that that's the idea behind it, that we discussed the existing RPMs and also the trademark clearinghouse, and maybe one note on the trademark clearinghouse for those who have not dealt with that particular RPM too much. The trademark clearinghouse consists of various elements. So there's a database element to it, a central database where upon application certain rights can be inserted, and then the applicants are verified through a service, and then based on that repository of information, two services are set up, and that's the Sunrise service and the Trademark Claim service. And it has been mentioned earlier that these protections might not be good enough because they're not permanent, but one might consider making them permanent or even to add an additional service based on the Trademark Clearinghouse database. So that's just to stimulate your thoughts. The do not sell list is a phrase that I caught up during the discussions during the last month, but there might be other ideas to invent new RPMs that can be discussed here. And maybe you have ideas as to what can be put in here and what should be more food for thought for David and his group. Claudia, please go ahead.
Hi, thank you, Thomas. Just taking up that invitation, I wonder if we would also be able to put in this column just another column in here that would say, for example, the nature of the protection mechanism. This is just picking up on your description of reactive, proactive. Perhaps it would help to formulate some of our thinking to quickly see in columns preventative, curative, preventative, curative, you know, UDRP, curative, reserve list, preventative. I think that that would very quickly and objectively kind of shape our discussions and feed into the pros and cons, surely, but just to give sort of a very quick overview.
Thank you, Claudia. Barry, can you take note of that, to have a sort of binary column where we determine the nature, reactive versus proactive? Thanks. Alan.
Thank you. By the way, I support that last suggestion. I think it's good. I think we need to be careful. Your analysis of reserve names list, for instance, saying it doesn't work because the organizations themselves can't register it, I think that's presuming certain implementations. If you look at the board's motion last month, they finessed it. They said if you want to be on the reserve name list, if you want to use the domain itself, then you can't apply to be on the reserve names list. It's a binary decision. So, you know, there's some discretion in an application process that could be involved in these protections also, not necessarily just by nature of who you are. That's number one. Number two, I really think the Trademark Clearinghouse should not be there as protection. It is not a protection. It's a mechanism. We have had Sunrises and trademark claims before in other launches without a Trademark Clearinghouse. It was done through a different mechanism. So I really think that line should be replaced by two or more lines identifying what the protections are, the Sunrise, the Trademark Claims. If this new straw man that Fatty is talking about goes ahead, secondary Trademark Claims, which are really the protections that we're talking about, not the clearinghouse itself. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Let me just clarify that in the applicant guidebook, the two protections being Sunrise and the Trademark Claim Service are both tagged, are both under the Trademark Clearinghouse section. But
I understand that, and if you look at the STI report, it explicitly said in this preamble the clearinghouse is not a protection. But the words live anyway.
Point taken, and Barry and I will make sure that we put additional words in field B8 to explain that we're analyzing the specific services of what is under the Trademark Clearinghouse heading. Greg.
First, I agree with both the comments that came before. Second, I just wanted to suggest that an additional row, and we may think of more rows as we go along, is the limited preventative registration, which is currently out for public comment as a proposal.
Good point. I'm sure Barry will take note of that and add that to the spreadsheet. Again, that's another area where, you know, I'd like to remind and encourage the whole group to add whatever columns or rows they deem appropriate, but that's certainly one that should be on. We might also consider allowing for the subgroup to identify preference or prioritize arguments, say this is better than that, or do a ranking. And then as we move along, we can even have a poll and ask the group members or even the wider community what they think. So any more requests for changes to the spreadsheet? No? Okay, then let's go to the last spreadsheet, and that's the only spreadsheet for the moment where I don't have a volunteer at the moment. I'll explain the spreadsheet to you first, and hopefully that will encourage you to volunteer to lead on that. Having talked about protections means that we might have tools, procedures to protect certain designations. But the question is, shall these protections be granted per se? So let's say, shall all organizations be put on a list without any activity? We just referred to the board decision that asked for organizations to apply for protection. So one possibility for us could be to not grant the protections per se, but only allow or admit those to the protections that have applied for it. And we would then need to discuss the pros and cons or make more remarks on that. So the options that I could come up with, but again, the list is not exhaustive, is that either the protections should be granted per se, that all organizations be protected without further requirements. We could do it upon application, which means that the identifiers of these organizations that have not been applied, that have not applied, will not automatically be protected. To give you an example, the World Health Organization might find that its acronym, WHO, also pronounced WHO, has never been a target of any attacks, and that therefore they might not choose, or that they might not wish for that string to be protected. So that could be left to the, you know, to open registration if they don't apply. We also might define protections subject to additional criteria that can be applied alternatively or cumulatively. So one might say that an organization that has never been harmed by any wrongdoers cannot get access to the protections. And you might link that to one or a certain number of final court decisions. I remember that some participants of this group have asked for court decisions granting protection, so that could go here if the group chose to. You might ask for one or multiple successful UDRP cases. One might ask for successful URS cases, and one might put into the pros and cons that, particularly here for the cons, that the URS is a decision that might not reflect the accurate legal situation because it's done so quickly, and that this might not be a suitable parameter. One might also ask for unambiguous evidence of one or multiple cases of infringing domain registrations, so that, again, one might put in some safeguards that not every organization, even if it has a generic name, can get admission to these protections. So that's the idea behind it, and I'd like to ask whether there are any volunteers to chair on this or to lead on this, or whether you have any remarks as to the format of this spreadsheet. Alan, please.
Yeah, I'm not volunteering. I would suggest there's another row, and I'm not quite sure how to phrase it, but when we talk about, this has been subject to a URS or a UDRP decision, we're almost wanting to ask the question of, is there a believable use of this organization's name or acronym or whatever it is we're protecting, which would be reasonable for someone else to register in one of the many, the 1,500 domains or any of the 1,500 domains that we're looking at. It strikes me that even though the name, that there are, in many cases, and you gave one of WHO, but there are likely to be many cases where there are reasonable registrations of these names, which would not, if a UDRP was filed or whatever the protect an appropriate mechanism were, it would not be found in favor of the IGO, the INGO, because it would be a reasonable non-conflicting use, presuming they weren't trying to, do phishing or spam or something based on the contents of that domain. So I don't know how to phrase it, but that sounds like one of the criteria that we should be looking for, because all of the things we're talking about are blocking. And blocking says we are judging every possible potential registrant as guilty and not going to give them a chance to do anything. And that's a pretty strong action to take. And I think we need some viable way of ensuring that we're not unreasonably prohibiting registrations, which in any rational world would be allowed. Thank you.
Alan, just for me to understand your point, you are saying that whenever an identifier of an organization can be used legitimately, you would not grant admission to the protection mechanism?
I'm saying if we recognize that there are legitimate uses of it, that we want to consider whether blocking is too strong an action. I think it's a thought process we need to be going through. I'm not suggesting the final implementation.
You qualify better and better for a leader of this subsection, I have to say.
Not if you want it done at this point. My plate is far too full.
To be quite honest, I have, and maybe this can help us kick off a discussion, I have given this very point considerable thought, and I think that this type of thinking should go into the protections mechanism section.
That's fine.
I'm not trying to impose that on you, nor am I saying that this is the right answer. But I think in defining a protection mechanism, the group will most probably come up with suggestions as to how to safeguard legitimate use. Because we do know, and I think that's my impression from the past correspondence is that there is a common view of the group that an exemption process for legitimate use is needed. And having said that, a potential protection tool needs to ensure that legitimate use is not blocked, but that a legitimate user is even seeing a level playing field for him or her to get the same chances to obtain a domain name in a new TLD as others. Views on that?
This is Robin. Can I get in the queue?
Yes, please. Go ahead. It's your turn.
Okay, great. 2 points. First, I noticed on the email list that Avery volunteered to at least join this admission group and maybe she'd be interested in leading. I don't know. I don't want to, you know, speak for her or put her on the spot, but I just wanted to mention that I'd seen on the list that she'd mentioned she would be interested in working on this group. So I wanted to raise that point. And then I also wanted to also agree with others on this, that we need this discussion on overbreadth of protections. And are the protections that are being requested or that were under discussion, is there, to what extent is there overbreadth? Are we preventing a lot of legitimate uses by, you know, for example, the blocking mechanisms, the do not register mechanisms, in order to reach a certain number of harms, are we also preventing a certain number of legitimate uses? And I think we need to really ask that question, and that needs to be something that we take into consideration when we're evaluating all of these different protection mechanisms. Thank you.
Robin, are you asking for an amendment of the protection spreadsheet then to...
I
would have thought that this should go into the cons column.
Well, I think it could, but again, I think it's a very specific question, and it may be one of the cons, but I think it's worth asking on a lot of the different issues, and there are other cons that may be worth discussing, and I would hate for that column to sort of get taken over by this only one issue of overbreadth.
Okay, is there any... let me take Ellen first. Ellen, please.
Yeah, just a quick comment that the issue we're talking about could fit in a number of places. It could fit under qualification criteria. That is, are there no other groups that rationally might want to register this for legitimate purposes? So it could fit anywhere. We just need to make sure we consider it somewhere.
It would ultimately be up to the leaders of the subgroup to ensure that all the arguments go there, but also for all of us to ensure that that all aspects are reflected. I'm happy to include another column here, so no problem with that. Do you have a suggested wording, Robin, that we can propose to the group?
I would just say overbreadth of protection. Does it maybe if you're just looking for one or two words, but really what we're trying to get at, I think, are the extent to which legitimate uses would be prevented.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe we can ask a specific question: can overbreadth be avoided? Right, because it's ultimately up to the design of the protection mechanism whether there's overbreadth or not, right? So can I suggest that we add an additional column stating the question, can overbreadth be avoided or excluded? Can overbreadth be excluded? Is there any opposition to that? Seeing none, I would like to ask Barry to include that extra column, and I have Ellen, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, my hand's still up from before.
No problem. Chuck has mentioned in the chat, or he's asked in the chat, whether David and Greg would be okay with combining the two subgroups. I'm afraid that Greg has left already, so the question goes out to David. David, would you be okay with combining the protection and admission subgroup?
I don't think that's a very good idea. I really think that the protection issue deserves a separate treatment, and I would be opposed to combining the two.
Okay. Thank you. I have Claudia next.
Hello, Thomas.
My question is a sort of a clarification. It's a conceptual question. I'm trying to understand. We have the spreadsheet that says protections, but it seems to me that it's talking more about existing rights protection mechanisms, and then we have a spreadsheet about admissions, which, of course, is the discussion about whether certain organizations should be allowed to be admitted to a protection. But I fail to see exactly where the discussion of the actual resulting protection, if there is any, would be. In other words, it sounds like we're talking about only reserved lists, and then there's some discussion about whether that would be legitimate and if there's any exceptions, but I wonder where, in what spreadsheet or in what column would we talk about, okay, so exactly what does the protection look like? Is it a reserved names list? Is it some sort of a different kind of reserved names list in terms of, you know, some sort of an exception or a claims mechanism? I'm just wondering, you know, on the first and the second level, if there, where that kind of a discussion would go, like what would the resulting protection look like if we do propose some?
Thanks for the question, Claudia. It's a very good question, actually. And I see that I have not been clear enough in the design of the spreadsheet. But the idea was that we put up all the options in the spreadsheet, both existing RPMs, discuss them, the pros and cons, but also new ideas for protection mechanisms and discuss those. And in an ideal world, we would end up with, you know, most of the proposals having a lot of cons and an overall assessment of not suitable, and then one solution that is described here where we say, okay, there are the pros or cons or whatever, you know, we might also have no suitable solution, but, you know, for the sake of simplifying things, we would have one option that has a lot of pros, no cons, and where the overall assessment is that it is a suitable mechanism. So that's the idea behind it. So if you have other ideas, other tools that you would like to propose, other procedures or amendments to existing RPMs, they should go in an extra column and be proposed there and discussed in the fields to the right of them. Does that answer your question, Claudia?
In a way, I guess. Thank you for explaining the background of your idea. I guess then, for example, if we were to suggest some sort of a reserved names list, then with some sort of exceptions for you know, agreements between the international organization and a particular applicant, I guess that would then go under the protections spreadsheet, maybe next to some sort of reserved names list, and then an explanation of what we would be proposing. It would be a reserved names list with conditions, I think.
Yes, propose you insert it there. Give it a special name because it's a different proposal based on these bilateral agreements that you were mentioning, and then discuss it or have it the group discuss there.
Okay, thank you.
You're most welcome. I have Chuck next.
Thanks, Thomas. As far as to maybe help facilitate closure on the last subgroup, a couple suggestions have been made. Robin suggested maybe Aubrey might be willing to be the rapporteur. We'd have to check with her, of course. And then Alan suggested that it might fit with the qualification criteria group, and I think that was the one that Jim and Kieran and David are going to lead. So since they're on the call, we could at least ask them whether they would be comfortable with that kind of a combination.
I pass on the question to you, Kieran, Jim.
Yes, I'd have to think about that. I'm not sure I could give you an answer right now.
Okay. As far as Avery is concerned, I have communicated with Avery earlier, and she's not particularly desperate to lead on one of those. But lacking other volunteers, she would have been okay with us appointing her in absence. So if we don't find a volunteer for this, you know, we might land her, or I will ask her after the call whether she would be willing to take care of the admission part. Chuck, do you have anything more to add? Your hands are still up.
Yeah, I'll put it down.
Thomas?
Jim, I take David first, and then it's your turn.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to suggest that to solve the problem of possible other protections, you change the row do not sell list and add or other proposed protections, which would enable people to fill in whatever they want.
We can do that. I'm sure Barry is going to take care of that. Thank you. Jim.
No, I think I agree with David on that suggestion. I was just going to say, if Avery did not want to take it, we could still consider it if you let us know.
That's much appreciated. Thank you. Chuck.
Sorry, Thomas, I lost connectivity, so I can't put my hand down.
But now that your hand is up, you have to say something. Not just kidding. Good. Are there more remarks, overall comments on this tool, on the spreadsheets? Hearing none, I would like to...
Alan, my hand is up.
Sorry, Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have a question on the spreadsheet, but we've talked a number of times about the teams that are going to work on each of the spreadsheets, and I haven't heard, unless I was sleeping through it, any mechanism for identifying who's on the teams.
I'm not suggesting that you slept, but I had proposed earlier that those who are willing to contribute to the various spreadsheets to populate them would send emails to the respective leaders.
Okay.
And then Barry actually said a word of caution in terms of spamming, which is perfectly correct. So we will make sure that you get contact details or email addresses that you can send your contributions to. So I think it's, Alan, unless you ask for it, I think I wouldn't want to call for volunteers to join the various groups. I would rather like to invite everybody on the call and those on the list that couldn't make it today to send whatever comments they might have to the respective leaders, and the leaders will hopefully be able to engage in a discussion with those who have contributed.
Okay, thank you. I know for my part, I would think a rational way is for the group leader to tentatively fill in their opinions and then ask for other comments, but I wouldn't want to send that out to the entire working group. You know, that's close to spamming for people who aren't interested in that particular aspect. So,
okay, shall we say then that the working group members shall send their input to the respective leaders by Friday?
Either their input or at least their names.
Or indicate their interest, yes, and then the working group leaders know whom they can send the communication with updates to.
That's reasonable.
You know, I should also say that, you know, when coming up with this proposal, I was also thinking of landing staff with this task of collecting input, but, you know, this is a community effort, and I think that it's reasonable for members of this group, some of which have a considerable track record and expertise in the various fields, to actually lead on that, because then it, you know, then I hope we will be able to keep up the momentum of people being being very active, contributing, and you know, so we should keep up the momentum. That was the idea behind it. Okay. That leads us to the next point on the agenda, and that is the work plan.
If I may, it's Margie.
Margie, please.
Yes, on the different groups that you were talking about, would it be helpful to have staff create a mailing list for the for each of those teams? I mean, that's what we've done in other working groups. The secretariats can set that up, and then those that want to participate can send an email to the secretariats. We could send an email with instructions if that would be helpful.
Well, if it's not too much of a burden for you, then I gladly accept that offer.
Yeah, no, we're used to doing that, and I just think it makes it easier to coordinate all these different activities. So I'll work with the team to make sure we get that set up.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Margie. Okay, let's go to the working plan. You may have read from my covering note that I proposed the next steps for our work, and certainly time is of essence with this project. Again, this has been called a case study both by the board and by the GAC, and I think we need to make sure that we deliver results as soon as we can while still being very diligent with our work. So the proposal is that we collect input to the spreadsheet and populate it before next week's call, and then discuss the interim results as a group. So in an ideal world, maybe the interim results of the work and the arguments that have been collected until then are sent to Barry by next Tuesday, so that Barry can put that into one spreadsheet and send it to the list. And we would, you know, starting from that, after that review on the 19th, we would write up a draft recommendation report, and discuss that during our meeting on the 2nd of January. We would then give the group the opportunity to review the interim result, and we can still add new information to it until the 9th, and that will provide us with the opportunity to prepare information for the next GNSO telephone conference, the GNSO Council telephone conference. And I already spoke to Jonathan Robinson, the GNSO Council chair, whether he would like me to present to the council during that January 17th call, and he agreed to that. So my understanding is that a speaking slot during that call or a section of that call is reserved to this task, and you know, we should work to being able to update the council on where we stand so that the council can then make a determination as to how it wishes to respond to the board in the light of the January 31st deadline that has been set. So that's the rough plan. I know it's ambitious, but I think we should keep it that ambitious in order to be, you know, to keep everybody's interest. And I truly believe that it's more encouraging to volunteers to work on working groups if they see things moving on quickly. I think part of the reason why volunteers are at times not so active on working groups is because they see them dragging on for too long, and so there is not the incentive of seeing immediate results, and that's the reason why I want to do things as quickly as we can. Now, can I get some feedback from the group on this plan until January?
Thomas, it's Jim Bykoff.
Jim, please go ahead.
We will start on this. I think for us, on our spreadsheet, it may be a little ambitious. We'll do the best we can, but we've got some other things that we have to do in other areas that, you know, are separate from this. And some of this is going to require, especially when we get into some of the new columns, it's going to require some effort to make sure that we present accurate and somewhat detailed facts to go into the sheet. So I'm just saying that we'll make every effort to do as much as we can before next meeting.
That's much appreciated, Jim. And if I may recommend, go from the general to the specific. So I think it would help the group to have the more general points in there, and then, as needed, go to a greater level of detail as we have, as we move on. Ellen, please.
Yeah, a couple of things. I agree with Jim. I think the target, if we're not going to have know who the volunteers are, and we set a deadline of Friday for people to say they're interested, having a consolidated massage spreadsheet by Tuesday is a bit optimistic. And the danger of not having that is the spreadsheet that we'll be producing will be the opinion of one person or two people, which may not be representative at all. On the other hand, if we can, either in that time frame or another time frame, come up with representative opinions, I don't think it's going to be a recommendation. I think we're going to start to show diverse opinions, and you know that's where our real work comes in, and trying to merge those into a recommendation the group can stand behind. And I think that's going to be really difficult. And lastly, I have no problem briefing the GNSO Council as to where we are, but I'm not sure of the relevance of the 31st of January target. That, to a large extent, I thought was subsumed by the more recent board resolution, and that particular deadline, they're no longer waiting on it. They acted ahead of time. So I'm not quite sure what we expect the GNSO Council to do at its January meeting based on an update we give them.
My understanding is that at least the council leadership wishes to receive an update and update the board on the progress that we made. I take your point about the interim results not being representative of the whole group's view. So I would suggest that we change the wording in the December 19th line, not saying create draft recommendation report, but create draft progress report, because it might not reflect a recommendation. And I think that we don't have the term recommendation later in the work plan. Is that okay for you, Ellen?
Yep.
Thomas, this is Brian. If I may have just a point of clarification. Just to clarify and to follow up on Alan's point, I think the January 31st deadline, if you recall, was specific to the resolution by the board with regarding the protection of the IOC and Red Cross, Red Crescent names in terms of, you know, protection at the second level for the first round of new GTLDs. It's not necessarily applied to the entire scope of this PDP. So I just wanted to clarify that particular point. And with that particular deadline.
Let me just bring up the resolution on my screen. I think you're referring to one of the whereases, Brian, and it reads, whereas the new GTLD program committee on September 13th, mm-hmm. 2012, requested that the GNSO Council advise the board by no later than January 31st, 2013, if it is aware of any reason, such as concerns with the global public interest or the security or stability of the DNS, the board should take into account its making its decision about whether to include second level protections for the IOC and Red Cross, Red Crescent names listed in section 22123 of the applicant guidebook by inclusion on a reserved names list applicable in all TLDs registries approved in the first round of the new GTLD program. I think that's the section that we're talking about.
Yes.
And I think that when we, as we move along with our work, knowing that this is a subsection of what we're doing, we could at least report or potentially report about what we did and, you know, whether or not we have seen any factors that need to be responded to here. And the answer can be no.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. No, I totally agree with that. I just wanted to clarify for the broader group that you know, when they hear this January 31st deadline, that it was in, you know, relation specifically to that particular issue, not the entire scope of the PDB working group here.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Alan, is your hand still up or up again?
Sorry, I'm away from my computer. It should be down.
Not to worry. Now, having discussed the work plan, knowing that it's ambitious, but still trying to do what we can in order to fulfill it, I think we have pretty much discussed the next steps already. These will be summed up. I hope I may ask staff to do so in an email to the list. The next meeting is going to be at the same time next week on Wednesday. And I think we're a little bit ahead of time already, but I have touched upon the points that I wanted to mention during this call. So my question to you is whether you have anything more to add or any further points that you would like to discuss. Hearing and reading none, we can even finish a little bit ahead of our time. Thank you so much for your patience and interest, and I hope that we will make good progress between this and next week's meeting. Please do inject your information and arguments to the spreadsheet through the mailing list that are going to be set up by staff. And thanks again for your participation and interest. Have a great evening. Have a great day.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.